to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Sunday, May 31, 2020. I'm your reader, Dan Shear. First article this morning, headlined, Cooler Heads Prevail. Cedar Valley peacefully protests the death of George Floyd, by Tim Jamieson from Waterloo. 1,000 people marched through downtown Waterloo Friday, protesting the death of yet another black American at the hands of a police officer. They carried signs demanding justice for George Floyd, who died on Memorial Day as a Minneapolis police officer held him down with a knee on his neck for nearly 9 minutes during an arrest. Demonstrators chanted, Black Lives Matter, I Can't Breathe, and No Justice, No Peace, as they marched from Veterans Memorial Hall across the 6th Street Bridge, past the Black Hawk County Jail, Courthouse, and City Hall before gathering in Lincoln Park. As they listened quietly and even applauded as incoming Waterloo Police Chief Joel Fitzgerald vowed he would demand accountability from his officers. It's a beautiful thing that you have right here, Fitzgerald told the diverse crowd. You have a cross-cultural group of people from every walk of life walking in solidarity about what they will not tolerate as members of this community. We have to live up to that responsibility, he added, and I pledge to you that we will be as accountable as we can to this community. Fitzgerald, who takes the reins Monday as the city's first African-American chief, apologized for the wrongs police officers have committed across the country in the past. Part of my role is making sure that members of the community know that the police department stands with them when something wrong happens, he said. It takes the police chief, it takes the mayor, it takes others to start building these bridges. The only way you do it is with honesty and integrity, giving citizens voice and respecting them. Joyce Levingston and Requia Campbell, who organized the protest, said the event wasn't just a way to voice outrage over what happened in Minneapolis. We want to paint a new master narrative of our community, of us actually joining together with the police and with them being part of the solution, Levingston said. We are all mourning together, and the officers are out here carrying the weight, too. Floyd, 46, was killed Monday while being arrested for alleged fraud over a counterfeit $20 bill. Widely seen videos taken by bystanders show Officer Derek Chauvin pressing his knee into the neck of Floyd, who is restrained on the ground and saying he couldn't breathe. The death led to nights of looting and fires in Minneapolis and around the country, and Chauvin was taken into custody Friday on a charge of third-degree murder. Seeing another African-American death at the hands of police, especially one caught on camera, has scared many of those attending the march in Waterloo. This is really hard for me, said Reverend Belinda Creighton Smith. When George Floyd cried out to his mama, he was crying out to me. I could feel his pain, I could feel his breath being cut off, and my breath too was cut off. State Representative Raz Smith said he saw his face on Floyd's face. I felt 400 years of oppression on my chest, Smith said. In that moment I knew today is our chance. This is our moment to come together and change it. Waterloo Human Rights Director Reverend Abraham Funchess said it was important for the Cedar Valley and persons everywhere to hold police accountable when necessary. We've got to be able to call police brutality what it is, with the understanding that there are some of them that do a good job, Funchess said, but there are others that are not doing such a good job. Many of our dreams have been snuffed out with the breath of George Floyd. Too many of our dreams have been snuffed out with the breath of Ahmaud Arbery. Too many of our dreams have been snuffed out with the killing of Breonna Taylor. We need new vision, he said. We need new direction. Our second article, headlined, Arizona missing persons case ends with grisly discovery in Evansdale. By Jeff Reinitz from Evansdale. An Arizona missing persons case with a former Waterloo man at its core took a stunning turn Friday when authorities found a buried vehicle with two Arizona residents dead inside. Chino Valley, Arizona police said the remains are believed to be those of Alyssa Landry and David Batten. They were discovered inside Landry's Subaru, buried in an undeveloped lot on Timber Oak Road, a dead-end road in Evansdale, ending more than a month of searching that stretched from central Arizona to the Cedar Valley. Official confirmation of the identities of the bodies awaits medical examiner results, police said. Charges against Landry's boyfriend, 24-year-old Mitchell Allen Minks, formerly of Waterloo, and anyone who may have assisted him are pending coordination between the Yavapai County Attorney's Office and federal prosecutors, police said. Minks has been in custody since late April, but has not yet been charged in connection with the case. Also Saturday, Waterloo police arrested another man linked to the case. Allen Thomas Tommy Tucker, 42, of Waterloo, was arrested on two counts of abuse of a corpse. Minks has been detained on a federal probation violation, and earlier in the week was transported from Iowa back to Arizona for a hearing. Authorities spent 3 days at the Timber Oak crime scene, a one-acre lot that houses a steel shed and animal pens. Neighbors said police arrived on the scene Wednesday. Trailers and light earth-moving equipment could be seen on the property Thursday. On Friday, officers used tarps to shield the area from view, but sounds of equipment could be heard in the neighborhood. Batten, 45, and Landry, 28, of Chino Valley, were reported missing around April 19th, along with Minks, who had been living with the family in Arizona. Landry was Minks' girlfriend, and Batten was her stepfather. Investigators searched Batten's home and found evidence of foul play April 22nd. Minks was found at a rural Blackhawk County home April 28th and detained. This week, Chino Valley police received information that evidence relating to the case was located on Timber Oak Road, and they notified local law enforcement and sent detectives to Iowa. No further information was provided about the tip. Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office, Waterloo Police Department, Evansdale Police Department, and teams with the FBI also assisted. Anyone with information about this case is asked to call Blackhawk County Dispatch at 319-291-2515 or Cedar Valley Crime Stoppers at 855-300-8477. Tips may also be left at www.cvcrimestop.com. Tips may also be sent with tip submit or by texting the word Cedar plus the information to crimes 274637. Our next article is headlined Primary Preview: Who is on the ballot for Tuesday's election? By Amy Rivers from Waterloo. Though it may have gotten lost in the shuffle given the coronavirus pandemic, there is still a primary election Tuesday. Voters must answer some major questions, including who will face U.S. Senator Joni Ernst in the fall. The deadline for requesting an absentee ballot has passed, but voters may cast a ballot in person from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday. Find your polling place at sos.iowa.gov. In the U.S. Senate, 4 Democrats are vying to run against Ernst in November. She has served 1 term in the U.S. Senate and is unopposed in the Republican primary. The Cook Political Report recently downgraded the statewide race from likely Republican to leans Republican. Michael Franken, a retired U.S. Navy admiral, said in a Courier interview his top issues are combating climate change, updating the Affordable Care Act, and cutting out corruption in Congress. Kimberly Graham, a lawyer specializing in child and family law, advocates for universal single-payer health care, the Green New Deal, racial justice, immigration, and workers' rights. Teresa Greenfield, the former president of a small commercial real estate business, has offered a plan to end political corruption. She is not taking money from corporate political action committees, wants to strengthen the Affordable Care Act with a public option, and let Medicare negotiate for lower drug prices. Eddie Merle, who owns a Des Moines property insurance company, wants to offer everyone the same health care coverage available to members of Congress. A fifth Democratic candidate, Cal Woods, has dropped out and announced his support for Franken. In the U.S. House District 1 race, which covers much of Northeast Iowa, including Blackhawk County, two Republicans are vying to face incumbent U.S. Representative Abby Finkenauer, a Dubuque Democrat serving her first term after flipping the seat blue by defeating former U.S. Representative Rod Blum. The Cook Political Report rates the district as a toss-up. Thomas Hansen of Decorah, a Winnesheek County farmer, is facing State Representative Ashley Hinson of Marion, currently serving her second term in the Iowa House. Hinson, a former morning television anchor, has the endorsement of President Donald Trump. Her financial supporters include Senator Joni Ernst's Victory Iowa PAC and several House GOP leadership PACs. In the Iowa House District 60 race, another competitive primary race to unseat a one-term incumbent that flipped blue is in Iowa House District 60, which encompasses Hudson, parts of Waterloo and Cedar Falls, and parts of rural Black Hawk County. Incumbent Democrat Dave Williams will face the winner of a race between Republicans Colleen Tierney and Ryan Howard. Republican Walt Rogers held the district from 2010 to 2018, until he was defeated by Williams, and before that the district was a longtime Republican stronghold. Republicans have held a state government trifecta in Iowa, with majorities in both the House and Senate, as well as the governorship, since 2017. Democrats only need to flip four seats in the House to regain control of that chamber. Tierney has worked as a real estate agent and, quote, in the beauty business, unquote, and has the backing of Waterloo City Council member Margaret Klein. Howard of Cedar Falls, a Deer & Company employee, has the backing of Blackhawk County Supervisor and former Waterloo Police Chief Dan Trelka. In House District 72, Democrats John Anderson and Christina Black Cloud Garcia are vying to face Republican incumbent Dean Fisher for the right to represent a portion of southern Blackhawk County, including LaPorte City, as well as all of Tama County and most of Marshall County. Fisher was first elected in 2012 and has served for 7 years. In 2018, he retained his seat against Democrat Mindy Benson with nearly 60% of the vote. Black Cloud Garcia is the Director of Senior Services for the Meskwaki Nation. Anderson rehabs homes in Tama County. Both have run for their party's nomination before, Anderson in 2016 and Black Cloud Garcia in 2012, but neither won the right to face Fisher, something bound to change this year. Next article, headlined Modern Day Spartans, by Tim Jamieson, courier from Waterloo. A global pandemic didn't stop families, friends, and supporters of the Iowa Army National Guard's Iron Man Battalion from cheering on their soldiers Saturday. Some 550 members of the Guard's 1st Battalion, 133rd Infantry Regiment, 2nd Brigade Combat Team, 34th Infantry Division, deployed to serve for a year in the Middle East as part of Operation Spartan Shield. send-off ceremonies at armories in Waterloo, Iowa Falls, Dubuque, Iowa City, and Davenport weren't open to the public due to the COVID-19 concerns, but spouses, family members, and loved ones got in hugs and kisses in the Waterloo Readiness Center parking lot before the ceremony. Then they lined 4th Street downtown for a parade of buses carrying soldiers off on the battalion's first deployment in 9 years. Barry Ellis of Humboldt showed his support by flying American and U.S. Army flags from his pickup truck bed, which he planned to drive behind the guard buses to Des Moines. His son, Specialist Nick Ellis, is among the 150 soldiers attached to the Waterloo-based headquarters company heading overseas. "As any father would be, I'm nervous," Barry said. "I want him to be safe, to keep his head on a swivel, and back up his battle buddies." But he said he was proud of his son, a University of Northern Iowa student, and the third generation of his family to serve active duty in the military. "Because of what he and all the other individuals are doing, we have freedoms," Ellis said. "He is representing the Constitution. He is the Constitution. He's the Bill of Rights." Inside the armory, soldiers in uniform prayed and heard speeches from military and community leaders before boarding buses. Lieutenant Colonel Garrett Gingrich, commander of the 133rd Infantry Regiment, talked about the spouses, parents, and children whose loved ones are serving their country. "Thank you for your sacrifices," Gingrich said. "Freedom is not free, and it is paid for by families picking up the burden of a spouse, son, or a daughter not being home. You're an essential part of the chain that allows us to protect what we have here." To his soldiers, Gingrich urged them to live up to the Iron Man and Iowa values. "One day you will look back with pride that you were a modern-day Spartan, a protector of freedom and a member of a time-honored profession of the Iron Man Battalion," he said. Major General Ben Correll, Adjutant General of the Iowa National Guard, noted this was the 20th deployment in the 159-year history of the 133rd. "The soldiers that stand before us today will navigate through their assigned mission, executing with honor, achieve mission accomplishment," Correll said. "I have high expectations of the Iron Men and the Iron Women that make up this formation today." Correll noted he had children among those being deployed. "I know the pride and the concern that all of our family members have in their minds and their hearts as we send these men and women off to do the work our nation is asking them to do," he said. "This is the 5th federal mobilization of the Iron Man Battalion since 2000, including nearly 22 months of supporting Operation Iraqi Freedom from September 2005 through August 2007. The battalion's most recent deployment was to Afghanistan in 2010. Some of the soldiers have served on active duty before, but at least 3 young guardsmen were excited about their first deployment. "It's going to be a good place to have as a first deployment," said PV2 Isaac Henson of Traer. The 19-year-old said he'll miss his family, including 5 brothers. Specialist Lane Arter, 21, of Plano in southern Iowa, said he was nervous, anxious just getting ready to do my job over there and get the work done. "I'm gung-ho right now." Asked what he expected to miss most during his employment, Arter replied, "Definitely my mom and my mom's cooking. I'm a mama's boy through and through. When she makes that tater tot casserole, ... end of quotation. PFC Kyle Beery, 19, leaves his job at North Iowa Collision Center in Clear Lake to serve, but is excited about the opportunity. "I'm ready to experience and explore. That's what I signed up for," he said. "Most of the places we are going, we are not going to be able to see in our civilian life." Sarah Estes and her 2 children were among the family members who gathered downtown to watch the short parade. Her husband, Specialist First Class Eric Estes, was leaving with the 133rd. He was in Iraq in 2008 and had other deployments, she said. It is not nearly as stressful as his other deployments. He's done it before, so it's kind of old hat. This is the first deployment since the couple married, but Sarah noted, I've been preparing since we started dating. Colonel Michael Wun, Public Affairs Director for the Iowa National Guard, said the deployment is expected to last about a year. They're going to go to a mobilization station in Texas and do some training down there, Wun said. Typically, that's 4 to 8 weeks. Once that's over, they'll deploy overseas. The Iron Man Battalion will provide area security and force protection operations in the U.S. Central Command Area of Responsibility, which encompasses 27 countries, including Afghanistan, Iraq, Kuwait, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates. Our next headline, Waverly Seeks Green Bridge Decision by Jim Jameson from Waverly. City leaders will try again to solve their decades-old Green Bridge problem this week. Waverly City Council members are scheduled Monday to discuss the future of the 3rd Street Southeast Bridge over the Cedar River, which has been studied multiple times since the early 2000s and continues to be a political hot potato. The historic bridge, a single-lane green-painted span built in 1917, has been closed since February 2015 after inspectors found corrosion on key bearings of the structure. Council members voted 4-3 at their last meeting, May 18th, to reject a $1 million state grant that would have obligated the city to replace the structure with a two-lane bridge. Council members Chris Glazer, Heather Buffer, Tim Kangas, and Matthew Schneider voted against accepting the grant, while Brian Bergen, Rod Drinkow, and Ann Rath voted for it. Glazer noted the city would be obligated to raise another $3.5 million locally to pay for the total cost of the new bridge. Another $3.1 million would have been needed eventually to resurface 3rd Street on either side of the new structure. I just have a hard time with the economy that we're in, that we're going to spend $6.6 million, Glazer said. That's going to affect the tax bill. Others said they favored a pedestrian-only replacement bridge to avoid pushing traffic into what is a residential and park area. A pedestrian bridge also could be designed to allow a single lane of traffic for emergency vehicles only. Supporters of the two-lane option were concerned Waverly will not have a key river crossing, especially when the planned Iowa Department of Transportation replacement of the Bremer Avenue Bridge in 2024 and 2025. Drinko noted residents would need to take lengthy detours on the Cedar River Parkway or Adams Parkway bridges to reach businesses on the other side of the river when Bremer Avenue is shut down. I'm really struggling with leaving our downtown merchants high and dry with no way for people to get to them, he said. With a two-lane alternative apparently off the table, council members will be looking at other options. A one-lane bridge, pedestrian crossing, or even complete removal when they meet this week. We have looked at this for almost 20 years. Various councils, various studies, various task forces, said City Administrator James Bronner. It's been a difficult decision to go through, weighing costs, neighborhood character, and history. A 2001 study called for replacing the bridge with a two-lane structure. In 2003, a local task force also recommended replacing the Green Bridge with two lanes before public outcry scrapped the plan. The City Council voted in 2017 to construct a pedestrian-only bridge, but it was vetoed by Chuck Infelt, the mayor at the time. Our next article, headlined, 5 Vie for 3 Democratic Blackhawk County Supervisor Nominations, by Tim Jameson from Waterloo. Three members of the Blackhawk County Board of Supervisors face primary challenges to retain their seats. The five-candidate battle for three Democratic nominations is the only contested courthouse race in Tuesday's primary election. Four-term supervisor Tom Little, two-term supervisor Linda Leyland, and first-term supervisor Chris Swartz hope to secure spots on November's general election ballot. Challengers Marty Postel and Terrence J. Hollingsworth are looking to steal nominations of their own. The race may already be decided before the polls open because a record number of primary voters have requested absentee ballots. Auditor Grant Veeder said nearly 17,500 absentee ballots had been requested and just 4,500 have yet to be returned by noon Friday. If enough people show up at the polls or return outstanding absentee ballots, the county will break the record primary turnout of 15,816 voters from 1994. Little, 67, of Evansdale, is a retired John Deere employee and veteran of the U.S. Marine Corps who has been on the county government board since 2005. He previously served 11 years on the Evansdale City Council. I think my experience has paid off over the last few years and will continue to pay off if I'm reelected, Little said. It's been a team effort, and I'm fortunate to have had good supervisors to work with. Little said the county has built its financial position and worked to improve the county's infrastructure during his tenure. We have really placed ourselves in a great position as far as roads and bridges, as well as buildings, he said. Little believes the supervisors will play a role in the COVID-19 recovery and likely will be required to make tough decisions as the year progresses. Leyland, 70, of Cedar Falls, worked more than 25 years in economic development before being elected to the supervisors in 2012. She is currently the only woman on the five-member board. Leyland said she has committed to fiscal responsibility, listening to constituents, and networking with other counties. The budget and how you spend that money providing the best services you can is the primary responsibility of the board, she said. The fact that we're in such a strong financial position compared to when I started, I'm very proud of that. I also think I have a strong working relationship with the staff and other county supervisors, she added. I'm always very open to hearing from the residents and wish we would hear more from them. Leyland said her goals include completing projects, installing solar energy panels at county buildings, and working on plans to be more prepared for future pandemics. Schwartz, 40, of Waterloo, worked for a social justice advocacy group before being elected as a supervisor in 2016. He currently serves as board chairman. I think I've demonstrated I'm a consistent voice for the voiceless, whether it was my relentless advocacy for our community's homeless population, where I helped establish the warming center, or when I formed a delegation of local elected officials demanding the safety of employees at Tyson, he said. Schwartz said he has been a leader on county environmental issues, including work on watershed management boards and spearheading the solar energy project. He also noted his demand for legal action to help taxpayers secure $500,000 United Healthcare was refusing to pay the county last year. Schwartz, who never missed a board meeting to date, said his future goals include partnering with cities to invent restoration of older housing stock. I will fight for workers and unions, the environment, and economic vitality of the community, he added. Postel, 59, of Cedar Falls, said his experience working 37 years at GMAC Mortgage Aquin Loan Servicing, including serving as vice president for the contract center operations, will be an asset to the county. I have approached every major project I've ever been a part of with an open mind, and I seek out opinions and perspectives from a wide range of individuals, he said. having a fresh set of eyes to look at things is a necessity. Postel, who has served as in a variety of community groups, said he also wants to bring greater transparency to the county's board operations and decision-making while helping the county chart a path out of the current health crisis. With so much being driven by COVID-19 pandemic, it's really given us a chance to pause and think of how we should move forward, he said. Hollingsworth, who's 47, raised in Waterloo and returned in 2016 after working in Chicago as an independent investment banker. He still works helping raise money for private companies working to become publicly traded, and he serves on the Blackhawk County Agricultural Extension Council and the Waterloo Human Rights Commission. I don't have political aspirations, but I had a conversation with one of the candidates, and I understood what he meant when he spoke about the challenges of working on projects and the benefit of working from the inside out, he said. I needed to be in the care to have conversations and solve problems, he added. If we're going to solve it, we need to solve it being actively part of the solution. Hollingsworth said he is particularly interested in economic development and ensuring the county has proper infrastructure in place. We've had a lot of growth over the last few years, but it has not been equitable across the entire county, he said. You need the right people sitting in the right places that understand how to solve problems, and I think I can have a lot of value from that standpoint. No Republicans filed nomination papers to run for supervisor in the primary. The GOP can hold a nominating convention later in the year to fill the party's vacancies on the general election ballot. In other county-level races, 8-term incumbent Auditor Grant Beter and 3-term incumbent Sheriff Tony Thompson are running unopposed in the Democratic primary. Dan Trulka, a supervisor and former Waterloo police chief, is running unopposed for the Republican sheriff's nomination. Billy Joe Heth, a current auditor's employee, is running alone for the Republican auditor's nomination. This is a reminder. You are listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Sunday, May 31, 2020, on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. From Cedar Falls, Jerry L. Ackerman, 1938 to 2020. Jerry Lee Ackerman, 81, of Cedar Falls, died Friday, May 29th, at home. He was born November 15th, 1938, in Iowa City, son of Ollie and Mabel Eldridge Ackerman. He married Patricia Pat Malone on September 15, 1957, at First United Methodist Church in Cedar Falls. He served in the U.S. Marine Corps and was employed in maintenance at Viking Pump Company for 41 years, retiring in 2001. He was a member of First United Methodist Church and Fraternal Order of Eagles. Ambetz Post 49. Richardson Funeral Services assisting the family. Memorials to First United Methodist Church, Cedar Falls, or Donor's Choice. Online condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. From Waterloo, Roger Bartlett, 1944 to 2020. Roger Bartlett, 75, of Waterloo, died at home Tuesday, May 26, of leukemia. He was born August 5, 1944, in Red Wing, Minnesota, son of Warren and Bessie Gruttenhaus Bartlett. He graduated from Ellsworth, Wisconsin High School, earned a bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin-River Falls, and a master's from the University of Northern Iowa. He taught for the Waterloo Community Schools for 44 years, initially at Kittrell Elementary and then 25 years at Expo High School. He married Susan Sinard 1968 in Ellsworth, Wisconsin. A private family service will take place with burial at Waterloo Memorial Park Cemetery. A gathering of friends and family will be held at a later date. Memorials to Cedar Valley Hospice House or Cedar Bend Humane Society. Condolences at www.lockfuneralhome.com. Roger was a simple man who enjoyed life and loved to learn. His family, friends, church, art, and sculpted garden were all important. Roger encouraged people, and his wisdom, love, and presence will be missed. From LaPorte City, Billy W. Folk, 1936 to 2020. Billy Wayne, or Bill Folk, 83, of LaPorte City, died at Cedar Valley Hospice Home Thursday, May 28. Bill was born July 27, 1936, on the farm in LaPorte City, son of William Wayne and Velma Rourke Folk. Bill's mother died when he was 2, and he was raised by Ori and LaRue Folk. He graduated from Orange Consolidated High School in 1953. He married Marcella Sally Wagner on July 21, 1956 at Emmanuel Lutheran Church. She died March 29, 2017. He farmed outside of Washburn and was a member of Emmanuel Lutheran Church. Services will be at 11 a.m. Monday, June 1, at Emmanuel Lutheran Church, Cedar Falls, with visitation for an hour before the service with burial in Garden of Memory Cemetery, Waterloo. Services will be broadcast live, courtesy of Emmanuel Lutheran Church, from its Facebook page. Memorials may be directed to the family or Cedar Valley Hospice. Cards sent to the funeral home will be forwarded to the family. Online condolences at www.lockfuneralhome.com. Bill was a train enthusiast, family genealogy expert, best supporter of his grandchildren, and a master storyteller. From Waterloo, Robert G. Carman, 1942 to 2020. Robert G., or Bob Carman, 78 of Waterloo, died Thursday, May 28, 2020, at his home. He was born January 24, 1942, in Waterloo, son of Eldon and Peggy Perry Carman. Bob married Joanne Otto on October 5, 1965, in Waterloo. She died July 2, 2010. He married Mandy Adair on June 4, 2014, in Waterloo. He worked for the Waterloo Water Works, retiring after many years. There will be no visitation or service. His wishes were to be cremated. Kern's Funeral Service, Kimball Chapel, assisted the family with arrangements. Memorials to the family. Online condolences at www.kernsfuneralservice.com. Bob enjoyed fishing, camping, watching Western movies, and he loved his dog, Gabby. From Cedar Falls, Sandra Johnson, 1949 to 2020. Sandra, known as Sandy Johnson, 71 of Cedar Falls, died Monday, May 25, at home. She was born January 12, 1949 in Des Moines, daughter of Robert and Elsie Anderson Johnson. She worked for property management with Ridge Village in Waterloo. No services are being planned at this time. Richardson Funeral Service is assisting the family. Memorials to the family. Online condolences may be left at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. From Waterloo, Charles F. Chambers, 1934 to 2020. Charles Floyd Chambers, 85, died Tuesday, May 26, at Northcrest Specialty Care. He was born July 11, 1934, in Leland, Mississippi, son of Robert and Alice Penn Chambers. He was previously married to Simella Sanders and later divorced. Charles served in the U.S. Army and attended Gates Business College in Waterloo. He worked at Rath Packing Company for more than 37 years and was a tax preparer for a part-time. Due to the COVID-19 limitations, a future celebration of life is planned for July. Sanders Funeral Home is handling arrangements. Charles enjoyed reading and music, especially jazz, as well as horse racing and trips to the casino and good food. His presence will be missed. From Waterloo, Gertrude R. Fry, 1922-2020. Gertrude Remley Fry, 98, of Waterloo, died Tuesday, May 26th at home. She was born March 22, 1922, in Millville, daughter of Thomas and Effie Tyndall Tompkins. She attended Gates Business College. Gertrude married Glenn W. Fry on May 17, 1968, in Charles City. He died December 24, 2001. She worked at Salisbury Labs in Charles City for 18 years, retiring as a lab technician. Gertrude was a member of St. John Lutheran Church in Charles City and Trinity Lutheran Church in Waterloo. Services took place at Locke Funeral Home with burial in Sunnyside Memory Gardens in Charles City. Memorials can be directed to Trinity American Lutheran Church or Cedar Valley Hospice. Online condolences at lockfuneralhome.com. She sang in the choir, quilted, and volunteered in church office. Gertrude was also a member of the Red Hat Society. She enjoyed dancing, sewing, cooking, baking, playing cards and bingo, and spending time with her grandchildren. From Cedar Falls, Joseph Linkman, 1928-2020. Joseph Linkman, 92, of Cedar Falls, died Friday, May 22, at Mercy One Cedar Falls Medical Center. He was born April 3, 1928, in Alexandria, Missouri, son of Wilhelm and Magdalena Feichert Linkman. He married Mary or Pat Lewis in 1953 in Maryland, and they later divorced. He married Zelma McEnroy on September 30th, 1972 in Waverly. She died April 14, 2005. He then remarried Pat in October 2005 in Waterloo. She died November 17, 2015. He served in the U.S. Army during the Korean War and was a core maker with Viking Pump for 31 years. Private family graveside services will be held in Cedar Valley Memorial Gardens in Cedar Falls. Memorials to the family for designation at a later date. Online condolences at www.richardsonfuneralservice.com. From Waterloo, Gloria M. Connor, 1928-2020. Gloria M. Connor, 91, of Waterloo, died Thursday, May 28, at Elms in Rhinebeck of natural causes. She was born December 15, 1928, in Waterloo, daughter of Albert Huffman and Virginia Miller Wilson Huffman, and stepdaughter of Raymond Dutch Wilson. She graduated from West Waterloo High School. Gloria worked at John Deere and retired from the Waterloo Waterworks. Gloria married James Robert Connor on May 16, 1948, at Waterloo Church of the Brethren. She was a member of Hammond Avenue Brethren Church. Private family services will be held with burial in Garden of Memories, Parrot and Wood Chapel of Memories, and Overton Family Service, Waterloo, is handling arrangements. Online condolences at www.overtonservice.com. Gloria enjoyed traveling around the world, baking, reading, and doing crossword puzzles. From Cedar Falls, Anthony M. Lumetta II, 1993 to 2020. Anthony Matthew Lumetta II, 26, died at home in Cedar Falls Monday, May 25, after a brief illness. He was born October 26, 1993, in Waterloo, son of Anthony and Tracy Bretman Lumetta. Anthony was a 2012 graduate of Cedar Falls High School and studied business at Hawkeye Community College in Waterloo. He was an Eagle Scout with Boy Scout Troop 158, a member of Ducks Unlimited and the NRA. Services will be private. Burial will be at Harlington Cemetery in Waverly. Dahl Van Hove Schoof Funeral Home is assisting the family. Memorials to the family for future charity designation. Online condolences at www.dahlfuneralhome.com. Anthony was an avid hunter, fisherman, and was passionate for all things outdoors. Anthony's favorite thing to do was spending time with his family, especially his cousins. From Cedar Falls, Dwayne D. Wyden, 1928 to 2020. Dwayne Daniel Wyden, 92 of Cedar Falls, died Thursday, May 28 at Cedar Valley Hospice Home in Waterloo. He was born May 6, 1928 in Raymond, son of William and Rose Linder Wyden. He married Dolores M. Loris on June 10, 1947 in Waterloo. She died March 20, 2012. He worked at Rath Packing Company and then in maintenance at First Congregational Church in Waterloo. A celebration of life will be held at a later date. Richardson Funeral Service is assisting the family. Memorials to Cedar Valley Hospice, Cedar Falls Municipal Band, or Donor's Choice. Online condolences at richardsonfuneralservice.com. He was our family's Mr. Fix-It. He played a good game of golf and caught a lot of fish. He had a wonderful sense of humor and laugh. He loved his family very much, especially his grandkids. Love and miss you forever. From Waverly, Betty Bernice Porter, 96 of Denver and formerly of Waverly, died May 24th at Willow Winds in Denver. Betty was born October 6, 1923 in Plainview, Nebraska, daughter of Christy and Leslie Phipps Thomas. She graduated from Rock Rapids High School, then attended Iowa State Teachers College for 2 years. She taught in country schools. She married Howard Thomas Porter on July 3, 1943 in San Luis Obispo, California. She completed her BA in education at Wartburg, graduating in 1969, and then taught at Waverly Shellrock Junior High. Betty was a member of Trinity United Methodist Church in Waverly and AMVET's Ladies Auxiliary. A memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, June 6, at Trinity United Methodist Church. Seating will be limited by reservation to family and close friends. Burial of cremains will be held at a later date in Rhinebeck Cemetery, Rhinebeck. Kaiser Corson Funeral Home in Waverly assisted the family. Memorials in lieu of flowers, memorials to Trinity United Methodist Church, Willow Winds Assisted Living, or Cedar Valley Hospice. Now we'll return to more news articles. Next one headlined, Cedar Falls to receive additional low-income housing funds due to COVID-19. This by Andrew Wind from Cedar Falls. An additional $160,000 in federal funding is being received by the city to help maintain affordable housing and keep people from becoming homeless in the face of the pandemic. Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act funds have been allocated to Cedar Falls through the Community Development Block Grant and Home Program. The City Council Monday will consider amendments to a series of plans related to receiving the additional dollars. The 7 p.m. meeting will be held by video conference. The public can watch it on Cedar Falls Cable Channel 15 or at the station's YouTube site. Those who want to participate in the meeting can find details on dialing in with their phone, as well as joining the video conference by smartphone or computer on the agenda at cedarfalls.com/5852/public-meeting-agendas-with-video. The city will receive $100,000 to rehabilitate affordable owner-occupied homes, $32,132 for service agency support to help keep people from becoming homeless, and $28,530 for planning and administration of the grant funds. The $160,662 is on top of the $105,075 in block grant funds already received, for a total of $265,737. Public hearings will be held on amendments to the Citizen Participation Plan, the 5-year Consolidation Plan, and the Annual Action Plan, followed by approval of proposed changes that make acceptance of the funds possible. Later in the meeting, the Council is expected to approve an amendment to its agreement with the Iowa Northland Regional Council of Governments for grant administration and technical services related to receiving the CARES Act money. The Council will also hold a hearing on the proposed vacation of certain public right-of-way along Prairie Parkway and consider approving a related ordinance. In other business, the Council will consider approving the $69,608 low bid from Boulder Contracting of Grundy Center for the 2020 Community Development Block Grant Sidewalk Infill Project, and they will consider for approving an amendment to the preliminary plat for the arbors that will increase the housing density for the final three phases of the development. A 6:25 p.m. Committee of the Whole meeting will include an update from GROW Cedar Valley. Waterloo Council eyes sewer fee hike, by Tim Jamieson of Waterloo. Sewer bills could jump more than 6% this year as the city looks for additional funds to upgrade its treatment plant and collection system. Waterloo City Council members are scheduled Monday to consider an ordinance that would raise the average residential sewer user's monthly bill by about $1.80 beginning July 1st. The proposal follows a two-stage 10% sewer rate hike in 2019, which boosted the average monthly bill to $28.35. Actual bills are based on water usage. These rates will remain about the seventh lowest of the 43 communities with populations greater than 10,000 in the state after applying these increases. And assuming other entities don't adopt rate increases, the third lowest of the largest 11 cities, Chief Financial Officer Michelle Widener said in a memorandum to council members. The city is currently working on an estimated $100 million plan to upgrade its sewage treatment plant, including $56 million in the next 5 years. That includes a $16.6 million contract approved in February to replace, expand, and improve the plant's ability to handle biosolids. Another $70 million in construction is expected to repair and enhance the collection system, which is the mains and pumps that carry wastewater to the plant. Much of that work is required under a federal consent decree resulting from enforcement action by the Environmental Protection Agency. Widener said that the proposed July 1st increase should cover the debt payments the city will need to make for projects financed in the coming fiscal year, but she said additional increases are likely for the next several years as the projects continue. If rates aren't increased and the improvements required by the EPA and the Iowa Department of Natural Resources are not made, the city won't be able to comply with the regulatory requirements and will likely be penalized with fines, she added. The meeting is scheduled for 5:30 p.m. Monday in the council chambers of City Hall. Council members will be attending electronically, and residents wishing to comment on items are encouraged to do so via email to the city clerk's office or contact the clerk to get log information to participate in the meeting by phone or Zoom meeting. And that does it for today's reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for Sunday, May 31st, 2020. I'm your reader, Dan Shear. You can access a recording of today's readings on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thanks for listening today. Have a pleasant and safe day.